This past Wednesday night, we had our lighting of the Nativity, as we do every year. A wonderful time when we gather together to eat and sing and formally light our Nativity outside. And it's a great time. We had envisioned this peaceful, serene time of singing, calm time of worship and singing quietly outside. As we were finishing dinner and moving into our time of worship, some people standing at this side of the building heard an explosion and saw some sparks flying from a pole right here at this corner on our, basically on our property at Preston and McFarland. It may not be technically our property, but right here. And the power went out. And so the whole building was basically dark. We had some emergency lights. And let me tell you what, if you want to see people go from peaceful to not very quickly. Now, it ended fine, and everybody did a great job. We came in here, and there was some of the lights still worked, the emergency lights, and we just had an unplugged time of worship, and everyone still played their parts. I'm so thankful for that. But it was this time we had imagined peaceful, serene, and just instant chaos for a few minutes as we had to scramble and retool everything. You may have had these experiences on big holidays, big special days, where it's supposed to be peaceful and joyous, and it turns to chaos. It's anything but peace, whether it's Christmas or any other big, special day. Last spring, I blocked out some time to go shopping at North Park Mall because Aubrey and I were close to celebrating our 20th wedding anniversary. So it was time to go pick out some jewelry. I've been here long enough to know none of the stores on the very south side of the mall are my scene. So I avoided those stores, but I thought surely there's some other places where folks like me could go and pick out jewelry appropriate for a 20th wedding anniversary. Now, the pressure I felt was all mine. You know Aubrey, she's the least pretentious person around. She wasn't putting any pressure. It was just me trying to do a good job. So I proceeded to go through a few stores, and one of the stores, the person quickly told me how many thousands of dollars per year celebrating I should be expecting to spend. I'm glad you laugh at that too. Good. And then I went in another store, and they quickly told me, well, it sounds like you don't really know how we operate. We're a special order store, and so you're probably not going to find what you're looking for here. And after I had been treated like that a few times, something activated in me, and I don't know if it was a panic attack or not, but I just could not get out of that mall fast enough. And I just raced to my car, which was parked out on the northeast side, and I just kind of melted down. It had been a hard week at home. You have those two. Everything was piling up. And I'm sitting in my car like weeping and pounding on the steering wheel like you are a failure and you can't even get in the right state of mind to shop for your wife's anniversary present. And there's a song I had been listening to recently by a small artist. He's an indie artist named Justin Carlson. And the title of his song is Panic Attack in Hobby Lobby. And it's one of those songs that's funny, but then kind of hits you. And the first verse says, yesterday I had a panic attack three aisles down from where they keep the candles, trying hard to breathe by a wooden sign that reads, God won't give you more than you can handle. I wonder if you've had those moments where all the big feelings come up on the special days and a time that's supposed to be peaceful and celebratory and serene and joyous turns into something opposite. Whatever is happening in your life changes that peace to chaos and activates every bit of your anxiety. I want to take us to the book of Micah today. This prophet is in the 8th century, and he's talking to the people of God. This is in Micah chapter 5, and an invasion is on the horizon because of their own disobedience. And Micah in these chapters is giving them these pairings of despair and then hope. You're going to be invaded, but ultimately God will be victorious. And And in chapter 5, he's on another one of these sort of back and forth moments where he's saying, you're going to face this hardship, but eventually God's going to send a new ruler to you. And so here's what he says in chapter 5, verse 2. But you, Bethlehem Ephrathah, though you are small among the clans of Judah, out of you will come for me one who will be ruler over Israel, whose origins are from old, from ancient times. This is the verse that gets cited in the Gospel of Matthew. When King Herod, who's threatened by this birth of this baby Jesus, he sends his scouts out to figure out what's going on. And they go see this child and they come back and they say, everyone's talking about this. This is the new king. And Herod said, well, where does Scripture say the new king is going to be born? And they're like, well, unfortunately for you, it's Bethlehem, where this child is. And so Herod, because of this prophecy, knows that the end of his rule and his power is in sight. But think of the contrast of little Bethlehem, that little town of Bethlehem like we sing about, and the capital city of Jerusalem. Imagine Herod in his lofty towers looking out and saying, the threat against me is coming from the sticks way out there. I'm in this powerful city, and Bethlehem is where this threat will come from. It's God's choice of the least likely city. So Micah's prophesying about this, and he continues in verse 3. Therefore, Israel will be abandoned until the time when she who is in labor bears a son. He will stand and shepherd his flock in the strength of the Lord, in the majesty of the name of the Lord his God, and they will live securely, for his greatness will reach to the ends of the earth. And he will be our peace when the Assyrians invade our land and march through our fortresses. A lot of imagery here. A person who is, you've got a woman who's in labor, so there's this pain, but then an end inside, a joyous end. And the person coming is not a strong man, not a dictator, not someone who's going to go defeat all the people they don't like. It's a shepherd. That's where their hope lies in this passage. A gentle shepherd. And you picture the people of Israel as sheep who are being led by a shepherd. That's what they look forward to. And the final verse, the one that you can see on the screen. He will be our peace when they invade. Those two things don't go together, do they? Peace when they invade. Wouldn't you say the peace maybe after they invade? But Micah here says that this prophesied ruler will be the peace when they invade. How would you talk about peace during an invasion? We fast forward several centuries. September 3rd, 1939 was the first Sunday after Nazi Germany had invaded Poland. One of several steps that accelerated World War II. And this invasion, as you likely know, was supported by, if not maybe tolerated by, most of the German Christians. So the German Christian movement was all on board with what was happening in Nazi Germany. But there was another group that I've been reading about lately, and you may have heard of them, the Confessing Church. If you've heard of Dietrich Bonhoeffer and seen that movie, there were those who said, no, we're not on board with this. It's interesting to read what they talked about and preached about as their own country, fueled by the support of many of their fellow Christians, was committing these atrocities. And so on this Sunday, a preacher named Helmut Gollwitzer gets up to preach to his church in Berlin. Now, Gollwitzer inherited his pulpit from a guy named Martin Niemöller. And if you don't know that name, he's the guy who said, first they came for these people and I didn't speak up because I wasn't part of them. That famous quote. Imagine inheriting your pulpit from that guy. And Gollwitzer is okay getting into some trouble. He preached after Kristallnacht. He later finds himself imprisoned in Germany and even by the Russians. So what is he going to say to his church as they watch their own country invade Poland and get themselves deeper into conflict? Well, he gets up that morning and he talks about the disconnect people must feel between reciting the creeds and then watching this chaos begin. What it's like to recite words of settledness and then look out and see everything be unsettled. And then he talks about walking by children on the playground the past few days and just how peaceful they look, how oblivious they must be. And it would be easy to look at those children during this invasion and say, well, they just have no idea what's coming. They weren't alive for the Great War 2 decades ago. They don't know what's about to happen. We know more than they do. But then Goldwitzer says, maybe they actually know more than we do. Maybe those kids understand what it's like to feel peace in the midst of this conflict because they know something deeper. And Goldwitzer says these words, when a heart has become steadfast through grace, when a person can say, I lie down and sleep in complete peace, for you alone, O Lord, help me so that I dwell secure. When these words live in a person's heart, then the kingdom of heaven has begun and a person has entered it. Our picture of peace sometimes is more like calm. We think it's calm, right? I'll be calm and peaceful once circumstances change, once this person is not present in my life, once this source of anxiety moves away, once all these things go away, then I can feel calm. And that's what it means for me to be at peace. No external pressures, my circumstances will change, and then I will feel at peace. We think peace is about our demeanor, remaining or at least looking calm. But when I read the words of Micah, when I read the story of Goldwitzer, I'm forced to believe that peace is really about confidence. It's not about a sense of calm. It's not about your heart rate. It's not about your blood pressure. It's not about a moment of zen. It is knowing God is present and faithful despite whatever circumstances are around me. It is looking around and saying, something deeper is going on than what I can see. Thus far, we've talked about big stuff. World War II, the Assyrian invasion of Israel. I want to bring it closer home for us now, and I want you to watch the story of our dear friends, Johan and Renee Ferguson. Many of you know that the Fergusons, about a year ago, lost their adult son, Dallas, in tragic circumstances. Even found out in a way that was very difficult. And when I thought about what peace would look like for us and how we would talk about it, I wanted to talk to Johan and Renee about what it's like to try to feel peace. What does that even mean this holiday season after they've experienced such loss? So please take a few minutes and let's hear from the Fergusons.
I'm Renee Ferguson. This is my husband, Johan, and we actually came to Preston Road through a friend of ours, through Eileen Nelson. Came down to Dallas about 13 years ago to start our business. Got to become an active member of Preston Road at that time.
When we first started coming to Preston Road, it was easy to remember what day we started because the previous preacher, it was his first Sunday preaching. And so that's when it started for us. Some changes in our life, a difficult situation with the Parkinson's 10 years ago.
Yeah. Dallas, he's our middle child, and he was the proverbial middle child. He's also the prodigal son. Yeah, he had his demons that he had to wrestle with, and he was always trying really hard. And then, you know, we were operating the business, and then we brought him on board with us. We kind of had like a second chance. And he lived with us for 8 years, and it was was truly the most beautiful time because we had our son back. And we lived and worked and ate through junking. Everything was junking. And the beauty was he was there to just help with Johan. There were struggles. But overall, there was love. And love conquers all. It was a year ago yesterday that Dallas died. He had gone out to California to be with his best friend from high school. He was like family to us. And they went out to dinner. They had drinks, apparently a few too many drinks, because they were both intoxicated. And these are two guys that I never even saw them wrestle together. They're walking down the street, they kind of get into an argument, one pushes the other, and then Nick hits him. And the hit caused him to fall and hit his head. And basically it was one of those rare things. He was pronounced dead within 2 hours of that.
I thought it was a practical joke of some type. And it turned out it wasn't. And I did that for a couple of weeks.
He was really a companion, but he was like I said, our prodigal son that, you know, came back, and we just welcomed him at that, and he did so much for us.
In our prayers every day, because I know now that he's not coming back.
I struggle with finding peace every day, but I have to just keep moving forward and find peace in those baby steps along the way. And I don't know that there's ever a point that you ever get to the other side, but you know, we all have hope, and we hope in Jesus and we hope in God. And oh, just be kind to yourself. That is probably the hardest thing to do, because you might be thinking of, you know, things you might have said or didn't do, and you just have to be kind to yourself. And gotta give it up to you. I can't do this. I can't do this alone. I can't do this on my own. That's finding peace.
I'm really thankful that the Fergusons were willing to tell their story to us about what it's like to feel peace, or maybe lack thereof, during this holiday season. So, you know, one of the things that Christians have said traditionally as a way of sending someone off, they'll say, "Peace be with you," or "May the peace of Christ be with you." And I don't think they're saying, "I hope you don't encounter any circumstances today that would make you feel less peaceful." Because none of us knows that. We can't know what the person we're sending off will encounter. We're saying something deeper than about their own circumstances. We are wishing something deeper for them. Because a greeting of peace, a blessing of peace, can't just be about lack of adversity they might face. So when you are sitting in your home in Assyria or in Jerusalem or in Bethlehem and the enemy comes, the presence of God is right there with you. When you're sitting at the table during a holiday meal and that person who activates every part of your nervous system is there too, and you know who that is, the peace of Jesus Christ is right there with you. When you're pounding the steering wheel in your car at North Park Mall and you feel like a failure in every aspect, the peace of Christ is with you. When your world is in chaos and when you can't imagine a moment that will feel normal again, when you're looking at the empty chair at that holiday meal, when you're watching family conflict, when you're worried about what next week will look like, whatever it is, Jesus is right there with you, and his peace is there to comfort you. So this Advent season, may the presence of Jesus Christ and the comfort that brings us give us peace. Let's stand and sing.